The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. It's the Friday show. Now, where we are, we've been having a little bit of a heat wave. Broke a record temperature yesterday for the area, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
95-year-old record or something like that. So yeah. We hit 109 in my city.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that was at the official high. I don't know if that was the official high at DFW, but in my city we hit 109. So just for the heck of it, I started thinking, what are the folks in Phoenix thinking? They're just laughing at this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I checked, and, you know, they're going to be 108, 109 today. By early next week, 116, 117 degrees in Phoenix. And I went, okay, all right, can anybody top that? Let me go to Death Valley. Death Valley, early next week, 121, 122 degrees. Now, I walked out to my deck.
Yeah.
Just to do my back deck. About 4 o'clock when it was right around 108 degrees.
Okay.
And so I went out just to take care of a couple things for 2 or 3 minutes. And when I came back in, I went, okay, it's hot, but it's dry.
But it's a dry heat.
I actually thought that. I said, it's hot, but it's dry.
Well,
but
yeah.
The fact is you really can't. Now, I did work earlier in the day and it was only at 102, 103,
mm-hmm.
and it was still a beat down. I mean, it was a...
Right.
So, I mean, I was moving, you know, I wasn't, like, moving fast I was just taking care of a couple things, and was when I came in. And I was, we'll say this, I was in the shade under an umbrella table when I thought that for a moment. I said, hot but dry.
I may have to get one of those umbrella hats. You ever see them?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm thinking about that. Or a riding lawnmower with an enclosed cabin air conditioning.
I remember somebody had that one time. I saw that on YouTube. Somebody actually had that.
Someone actually had an enclosed cab on a riding mower?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the, you know, on farms, a lot of those cabs now on farming equipment.
Oh, the big ones are air conditioning?
You know, have AC, have radios and everything else. No one says you have to be miserable when you're doing farm work, right?
Well, thank you, Willis Carrier, for inventing air conditioning.
Yes, thank you.
Where was air conditioning? Now, this is one of my favorite questions. Where did Willis Carrier invent air conditioning?
I don't know.
Probably one of the least places you'd ever think needs air conditioning. Buffalo.
Yeah.
Yeah. For like steel making stuff. It was actually done for, it was supposed to be done for industrial stuff is where they actually came upon it. So, yeah, that's, you know, and now we know Carrier air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Willis Carrier, yes. So.
I own a couple.
I think we all have at some point in our life, probably.
Mm-hmm. Owned a Carrier?
Everybody's owned a Carrier. But,
mm-hmm.
And so you start thinking about, and we've talked about this, you know, the great inventions. People talk about the computers and things like that. But some of the, you know, I think earlier great inventions, you know, air conditioning is one of them. I mean, you can populate the South because of it.
Right.
How did they do it? You know, if you're living in, how did anybody survive in the 1850s in Arizona? In Death Valley.
I'd go back to the early 1980s when I was a teenager and staying with my grandmother about 2 hours west of the DFW area, small town. And I was able to earn a little extra money in the morning by working in a peach orchard.
Ooh.
Yeah, right? Lots of sand. And great peaches. I come home. You didn't get to work too late. You had to go out early. You didn't get to work too late during this heat wave. and it was 118, 119, and it went on for a few days. And I come home, and my grandfather he's basically got the hose on the side of the house, the old asbestos siding, and the roof of the house, and he's trying to cool the house off. And because the only thing we had, or the only thing she had, was a swamp cooler. And really, I mean, the house was always very, very hot in the summer.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know if there was much insulation in that house.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the one with the scorpions.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you mentioned on yesterday's show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think about the early pioneers and how they did it and how wimpy we are, how non-tough we are compared to the things that they actually had to put up with.
My granddaughters were at the house yesterday, and they were like, hey, would you go to this place and pick up some pizza? Please, 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 can we have pizza today? And I said, I'm not going anywhere. We'll get it delivered. I'm not going outside. Are you crazy? There are people bursting into flames outside.
Well, the great inventions, the modern sewage treatment plants, running water, you know, just the water treatment plants, you know, the sewage plants, water treatment plants,
right?
You know, air conditioning, being able to produce and transmit electricity. And think about it. It's just the last 50 years that we've had all of those.
Right. Yeah.
Because air conditioning would have been the last one coming
right.
in, really.
Have you seen the homemade air conditioners on YouTube? Now, there's two different types, right? And that would, you get the big, a 5-gallon paint bucket.
Yes.
You put ice in it. Now, you on the side, you're going to have PVC pipe coming out. So you're going to carve a hole inside for the PVC pipe. And in the top, the lid, you're going to cut a hole the size of a small fan. So you set the fan face down on this bucket full of ice, and it forces cold air out that side pipe. And these guys are just... one guy actually had the fan hooked up to solar power outside. So he was totally off the grid. And then now they're doing it with coolers. You know, buy a cooler,
right.
And it will keep the ice, colder longer. And then they went to, okay, instead of just ice, we'll have a container that so this way you can just put the container back in the freezer at night, freeze it again, and you're not just using ice and wasting water. So all these different inventions that come up. And then this one guy came up with built his own circulation with a cold water circulation coils with a pump, a fish tank pump. So it's sending through the ice chest and cold water. It's circulating ice cold water onto an old he got an old part of it, the air conditioner, the condenser, the coils.
Right, right.
And just rigged it up to have cold water running through it. I just thought to myself,
what's the time limit for cooling? What's the
how
maximum,
long could
right?
It
what was
cool?
The maximum time limit for cooling?
I think it depends on how much you
and what
you put it in there
and how big of an area, or is that just to blow it on yourself?
You're talking about a very small area,
yeah, right?
It would be, because really it is one of those zombie apocalypse moments, right?
Right.
That if you lose power in the house, here's what you can do, and or if your air conditioner goes out, rather, here's what you can do. And the one guy with the solar fan said, if you lose power, you can still do it, and here's how. So he put a solar panel outside and then just ran the wiring out, and if you lose electricity, still be able to stay relatively comfortable.
Yeah. Happened to me once, never in my house, but when I had my townhouse before this, and I was just 30 seconds behind it. I saw the explosion, but a truck hit a utility pole
right.
and the transformer on.
Yeah.
It shut everything down for 2 days.
Yeah.
And it was in the middle of August.
Yep.
I stayed at a hotel.
Yep. No, I'm going to the Marriott.
It was impossible. There was no way. Because there were other townhomes around me. I remember going in. My house was at 122 degrees.
Yeah.
Sorry, but you can't sleep at 122.
Right. One of the things I donate this time of year is fans. You know, at the very least, to get if someone can't afford air conditioning, some of the charities will distribute some of these fans, and they can at least move the air in their home. And you know, when you hear check on the elderly,
yes,
that's a real thing. I mean, that's always a great idea if you know somebody in your neighborhood.
You know, well, remember how many elderly people were lost. Mm. Were, you know, died in the heat wave. I remember in Chicago.
Yeah,
I forgot what
right.
it was in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, they normally don't have air conditioning
right.
in many of these places, and it got so hot, and, you know, heat
And they didn't
want to
really keep windows open.
Right.
You know, because they didn't feel that was safe. But, yeah, it's a real thing. You know, you get into these what do they call them? The dog days of summer. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was when that's why as soon as I thought about, okay, it's hot here, but let's check Phoenix. Let's check Death Valley. Now, you don't have a lot of people in Death Valley, though. Not a lot of people hanging around.
No, it's
at 121, 122 degrees.
I think the word death
keeps a lot of people
deterrence.
Away,
right? You know. So, yeah.
But Phoenix, I got a couple of friends in Phoenix, and I've seen them at different reunions and things. I've never asked them, how do you handle it? And they'd probably say the same thing. Well, how did you handle your 108? Well, you stay in the house a lot.
Yeah, right.
You stay in your house, you jump in the air-conditioned car, you make sure that you have maintenance done on your house. Because that's one thing, I thought about it yesterday. Now, I had my whole air conditioning and heating system replaced in April. And I can guarantee you, if you've got air conditioning heating that hasn't been inspected in about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, when it gets this hot, everybody's thinking, oh, no, I hope it lasts, right?
Yeah. By the way, they set up some cooling centers around the DFW area, and they'll do that quite a bit so that if your house just isn't really, you really can't stay there in the heat, you can go to these cooling centers and hang out during the day. They're open during the day. Monday through the ones I saw were Monday through Saturday, so at least you could get some relief. You know.
Yeah, because it's brutal out there.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
It is.
All right, coming up here, I do want to. You know, you and I talked about the president this week and looked at the entire picture and said, look, the people that he may misspeak. Whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
whether you buy that or not, but as we said, when you look at all the different news articles that we read, whether it was I think Bloomberg or the Wall Street Journal, that were talking about what was actually going on, and that's not what the White House or the president intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
That statement that he came out with, that sentence that he came out with, what was coming out before that is not what was intended to be done. And you and I said, well, yeah, when you look at it, that's what most of these newspapers are reporting. Now, the left really isn't talking about it, but we have said, if you know anything about John Bolton, if you know anything about Mike Pompeo, you understand they don't trust Russia.
Right.
We'll hear from Mike Pompeo coming up following the bottom of the hour. He was on Fox News last night and, you know, hit all these, you know, different things. The president, at times, is a great communicator. At other times, he's a horrible communicator.
Hmm.
But what is the substance of what he actually believes and the people around him believe when it comes to Russia? All that more coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Is your rig prepared for hot summer months? As the temperature rises, so does the importance of tire maintenance. tire replacement is the number one roadside repair request during the summer months. Always make sure your tires are properly inflated and that your tires' tread depths match. Mismatched tire treads brushing against the extreme heat of the highway surfaces can result in more wear and tear, which is the last thing you need during a hot summer. You can help avoid tire breakdowns by conducting pre-trip inspections. Check to make sure your tread depths meet or exceed the DOT standards. And visually inspect your tires to make sure there are no nails, screws, or other road hazards that may increase your chances of a blowout.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. There it is. The president says he's not happy about Federal Reserve interest rate increases. From the Wall Street Journal, he delivered a rare presidential critique of the Federal Reserve, saying he hoped the central bank would stop raising interest rates. I'm not happy about it, he said in an interview Thursday with CNBC. His comments departed from a convention in which presidents have refrained from speaking specifically on monetary policy. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell was tapped by Mr. Trump last November. We had talked yesterday about how Powell said, yeah, they're going to be increasing them. They may be smaller increases, but expect two or three.
Well, and I think most had expected that. And that should be factored in. The president, you know, is concerned and clearly here should be concerned with both the tariffs being in place, his doing, and combined with, well, more expensive money
as it comes down to. And it was interesting that he said that because we had just brought it up yesterday. We said, mm-hmm. whoa, you know, that's the double whammy. And Powell said, he goes, look, the economy is doing great mm-hmm. right now, but mm-hmm. he's concerned about tariffs.
Right.
And that's when you and I had the discussion, said, okay, you've got tariffs and interest rates increasing here in the next 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the tariffs are going to start hitting. And the bigger the amount of tariffs, the bigger effect they're going to have on economic growth. And at the same time, you're raising rates. Whoa.
Yeah, it becomes...
You're not going to reach 4%.
Right. And that becomes something that is that perfect storm of economic conditions, and it's not necessary.
So it was funny because I knew the president wasn't going to change his opinion on tariffs.
Right.
So what's the only thing that you can do? And most predict that the Fed's going to show their independence, and so
mm-hmm.
what the president says isn't going to affect what they're going to do at all. In fact, it may make them more insistent on raising rates to show their independence from the president.
Right.
We shall see. I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be interesting as that, what the timing, I guess, will be of that, because then if the Fed is going to cite, you know, and they'll do this after a meeting, these conditions or those conditions, these indicators, those indicators, then does the effect, if the tariffs are still in place and there is a negative effect on the economy, will they consider that with the next move?
Well, Powell said he does expect the tariffs are going to hurt economic growth.
Right.
So he mentioned it 2 days ago.
And they'll have to see that, but they'll have to see that growth to factor that into a decision on raising a rate or how much they're going to raise a rate.
One would think.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see if that does affect it. That'll be interesting to watch, along with, I guess, the president's steadfastness on tariffs. How long do you keep that in place? How long do you allow the pain when industries are saying no, no, no?
Right. And the big tariffs wouldn't even hit for another 2 months.
Right.
The Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. All right, I'm going to play this audio cut from Fox News last night.
Okay.
And it was Mike Pompeo on with Shannon Bream. And the reason that's important to play Mike Pompeo is, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, is because of everybody wondering where the president and where the administration is. Even though the president made a bad mistake this week, we called it the worst day of his presidency. As we said, it wasn't what was supposed to happen. All news reports that we have seen and all the source stories that have come out from different publications said that's not what was intended. The president actually was there to challenge Putin, and it didn't happen. And that's what, for example, his staff expected him to do and believe that he will do. And now, as the president has come out after what happened Monday, he has come out strongly that he will keep Russia in line. Here is part of that interview on Fox News last night.
Let's talk about Russia. What do you make of the assessment? Our president appeared weak standing next to President Putin in Helsinki, and even allegations by lawmakers that he must, quote, have something on our president for him to be acting this way.
Well, Shannon, thanks for having me on today. I think those allegations are absurd. This administration has been relentless in its efforts to deter Russia from its bad behavior. We inherited a situation where Russia was running all over the United States. These last few days have been, frankly, more heat than light. This administration has been strong in supporting the Ukrainians, strong in making sure that we protected against Russian expansion to other parts of the world. We all recognize that that threat is real, and President Trump has been strong in protecting America from Russian aggression.
New York Times is reporting that the president was fully briefed a couple of weeks before the inauguration about meddling, presented compelling evidence about that. Do you worry, as a member who has deep roots in the intel community, that it appears he continues to equivocate on this issue of whether or not there has been Russian meddling?
I'm in a position to know. I did have the chance to talk to the president about this, frankly, over the last, almost year and a half now. The president has consistently been briefed on this issue. He understands that the Russians have interfered in our elections. He frankly understands that's been going on for an awfully long time. It wasn't just the 2016 election. Somehow America seems to forget the history of Russia's efforts to undermine Western democracy for decades now. It gets confused because there are those who want to make a partisan case out of this with respect to the Mueller investigation. The president understands what Russia did in our elections in 2016, and he has empowered each of us to make sure that it doesn't happen again in the 2018 or 2020 elections here in the United States as well.
And looking at those things moving forward, the president was asked repeatedly yesterday by a member of the press corps about whether he believes meddling is still ongoing. He responded, thank you, no. The White House says he was saying no to any further questions. Do you believe Russia is still meddling in our elections?
I have great confidence that the Russians will try and undermine Western democracy in 2017, 2018, 2019, and for an awfully long time. It is our responsibility as leaders of the United States government to do all that we can to deter them from interfering with us, not only in our elections, but more broadly as well.
The Russian ambassador to the U.S. is now saying that there were, quote, important verbal agreements made in the private conversations between our presidents. Can you tell us anything about those?
Well, I'm not sure I'd take the Russian ambassador's word for a whole lot. From time to time, they want to tell stories. Here's what I know. I've had a chance to talk with President Trump about his discussions with President Putin. There was progress made on a handful of fronts, agreements to try and work more closely on counterterrorism. An effort to begin conversations around arms control to prevent the spread of nuclear proliferation. There were lots of things discussed. There remains a great deal of work to do. But the president accomplished one of his goals, which was to create a way where the two leaders of these important countries can have positive, constructive conversations that surround these incredibly important issues. There'll be lots of places our two countries' interests and values diverge. President Trump's deeply aware of that.
Any chance this administration would actually entertain the idea of allowing Putin or anyone from his team to have the ability to question or have physical custody of people like our former ambassador, McFaul, or other DHS officials who have clearly been investigating things that are not beneficial to the Putin regime?
None.
Okay. Let's talk North Korea, because tomorrow you head to the UN to have discussions.
I answered that question, Shannon, that quickly, because I've watched the noise these last few days. The president's been very resolute. He understands precisely who it is we're dealing with in Russia. He gets it. He's trying to take opportunities, places where we find we can work together, and put America in a position to do the things he wants to do on behalf of the American people.
Okay, North Korea. Tomorrow you head to the UN to have discussions about our ongoing conversations with them. What do you make of the reports and assessments that North Korea has no intention at all of getting rid of their nuclear ambitions or their program?
No one's been closer to that than I have. So everyone else is simply speculating about what's taken place today. I've been there. The North Koreans have consistently reaffirmed their commitment, the commitment that Chairman Kim made to President Trump. No one was under any illusion that this was going to happen in hours or days or even weeks. It's going to take time to achieve this outcome. We hope for a brighter future for the North Korean people. And if Chairman Kim continues to follow through on his commitment, the people of North Korea will have a brighter future.
Let's talk.
And, you know, I wanted to play that because it's something that we have said all along that, you know, the left, look, this administration and the president himself and the people close in the communications, you know, department with him at times can be horrible communicating a message. Mm-hmm. I mean, just horrendous. But as you and I have said, when you get to the people of substance in the administration, when you get to a John Bolton, when you get to a Mike Pompeo, and this is the same thing with North Korea, that the president was out, you know, when the president was out, you know, being extremely optimistic, it was well known. If you read and you knew what was going on and you paid attention, it was out there in the media that both Pompeo and Bolton were under no illusions that this was an easy go whatsoever for North Korea. And the same thing when it came to Russia. And you and I have talked about this, the lead up to everything that happened Monday and where the administration and where Mike Pompeo and where Bolton stands and where they believe the president stands, even if he doesn't communicate it correctly at times and has to back off. I don't know why the president does it. I think it hurts an administration. I think it hurts what he wishes to do. And he continually does it, and it gets to be frustrating as all heck. But when you get down to what the administration actually wishes to do, well, as I said, to start the show out, if you believe, and you're out there right now believing what John Brennan said, that Trump has committed treason, and so you wish to look at the John Brennan standard of what is treason, well, then Obama committed treason with the Iran deal. He committed double treason. He committed quadruple treason because he lied to the American public about it.
Well, I mean, if you're going to set that standard.
By the Democrat standard of what treason is. And so it's, you know, the partisanship comes up. And sometimes you have to dig a little deeper, and we are in a time right now where slogans and memes and talking points, incomplete talking points, are being thrown out by both sides, and they don't do any good. When you actually do the research and get down to what this administration is actually about, what the substance is, when you're able to get through not the three-dimensional logic, but the three-dimensional communications of the Trump campaign, when you're able to actually get through it and see what is the substance and what comes out of it at the end and what is the goal when they all get together, it's really quite good. And the majority of it has. Now, we have voiced our opposition to the things that we think can really hurt. We think, except for the president recognizing China, we think the tariffs and the things that he has said, whether it's Europe or Canada, are completely unwarranted. And they could hurt us in a very, very serious way and may still come to hurt us. But in most other areas, the president, I think, is, I'll say in most other areas, I give him an 80%, which is higher than I give most presidents ever on the actual substance of where they're headed. on his communication skills, at times, he communicates the message extremely strongly. At other times, it's a big fat F.
You listen to Pompeo, and it's very clear. He has no problem answering a question very directly. You look at the people that are in place right now in his administration, right now, and it's a good setup. You have somebody as the Secretary of State who knows, who has the experience, and knows full well, you know, what the situation is. The one thing that's missing right now, the one huge piece of the puzzle that's missing, is communications. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be that hard.
No, it shouldn't be hard. And that's the frustrating part is the president gets in his own way
mm-hmm.
about what he's trying to accomplish and what his administration is attempting to accomplish.
Right.
And I don't know why. I don't know if it's because of a manic personality that has to just blurt out what's ever top of mind immediately without being prepared to know what his actual administration is actually doing. I don't know. I can't tell you what it is.
Right.
All I know is when he does it, it's wrong, and it hurts his own momentum. Even worse than the Democrats. To me, President Trump and his communication skills are his worst enemy at times. Not all the time.
Well, and
many times are his worst enemy.
It has to be thorough. It has to be all the way through. I mean, it has to be through his official mouthpiece, Ms. Sanders. It has to be, I don't think, you listen to Mike Pompeo's answers. The president's not afraid to answer questions. Okay, great. Part of what, one of his qualities that people liked about him. Then be very clear, be very blunt, and don't listen to whoever is telling you would versus wouldn't. Because that's not because they apparently don't know who they work for.
Well, that, as I said, that was the worst part this week, was not even the mistake. It was the explanation of it, where I told you, and we said on the air, I mean, he became a politician instead of Donald Trump.
Right.
Because as the Wall Street Journal was pointing out, I mean, they got on the plane and they were all trying to figure out, what are they going to do? How are they going to justify this? And that was the idea that they had come up with.
And that was a bad idea.
Bad idea. And so that's why I'm optimistic, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because you eventually can learn the truth. It's whether people are actually willing to learn the truth about what the goals and mission are of this administration, when you get down to the people and the core people of what they're actually trying to do in foreign policy, in the economy, what are they actually trying to do? What is the actual end goal in legislation or deals that they're trying to get done? And when it comes down to that level of it, I'm very, very happy.
Yeah, I don't have any problems otherwise. I mean, what it comes down to, again, that communications are very important. You have to be an effective communicator. And hopefully this misstep this week is going to be a very big learning moment.
I hope so.
Because if that's the case, then maybe the mistake was worth it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Latest poll is out. You ready?
All right.
A record 22% of Americans said this month they believe immigration, illegal aliens, that's the quote, is the most important problem facing the United States today, according to Gallup, these numbers released on Wednesday, the 22% of Americans in July who say immigration is the top problem is up from 14% in June and is the highest percentage naming that issue in Gallup's history of asking the most important problem question. Gallup editor-chief said in an analysis of the survey, the previous high had been 19%. Immigration, illegal aliens, 22%. Dissatisfaction with government and poor leadership, 19%. Race relations, racism, 7%. Unifying the country, 6%. Lack of respect for each other, 6%. The economy, 4%. Ethics, morals, religious, family decline, 3%. Healthcare, 3%. Poverty, 2%. Gun control, 2%. Education, 2%. Judicial system, 2%. Environment, 2%.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. And some of the video, Eric, from the tornadoes in and around Bondurant, Iowa yesterday, last night, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Some of the footage that I've seen, the one guy that was actually in his house, I think I have just a few seconds of him talking about the tornado going through right through his subdivision.
There's a tornado going into Bondurant as we speak. Blowing up power lines. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And right there was where it, you know, I don't know whether he's zooming or not.
Yeah.
But you see it. You see it's funny because you see the tornado way up in the sky, but you don't actually see the funnel on the ground. You just you see a little bit of wind and you see this house just explode.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrifying. It's happening right in front of them.
Governor Kim Reynolds on Twitter yesterday, devastated to see the destruction from today's severe storms and tornadoes, praying for all Iowans impacted and for the emergency management crews responding tonight. That's Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa.
And then a gust of wind on that Missouri lake.
Yeah, so 11 people dead. This was thunderstorms happening in Missouri, 11 people died. It was a duck boat carrying about 31 passengers total. It capsized. It sank on Thursday. This is Table Rock Lake near Branson. And they said some of the dead are children. They said the thunderstorms were coming through late in the afternoon. I believe it was around 4:30 on Thursday afternoon, and caused the boat to capsize and sink.
In our thoughts
yeah,
and prayers,
tragic.
I mean, just
tragic.
Horrendous. I don't believe anybody as of yet were killed in any of the tornadoes.
In Iowa, the latest is that there were 10 injured.
Yeah,
that's the latest from Iowa, and that was about 2 hours ago.
And I saw some of the damage from the there was a plant that had hit there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the destruction outside of the plant that
right.
I saw, cars piled on top of each other.
Yeah.
But thank God nobody was killed at that plant. In fact, I think they had released everybody who had they were brought to the hospital and released. So the injuries there were actually minor. But
yeah,
just terrifying.
On this lake near Branson, some of the gusts. This was a wind front ahead of a thunderstorm, and they said the gusts were 70 to 80 miles an hour. And that's, again, the boat that capsized on this lake near Branson.
In other news out there, well. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the NFL has at least temporarily reversed itself.
Yeah.
The NFL and the National Football League Players Association have agreed to halt enforcement of the rules regarding the new national anthem policy while the two sides work on a resolution over the next couple of weeks.
A resolution.
I'm sorry.
How long have they been working on a resolution?
Well, it's the 2-year anniversary is coming up.
Yeah.
Kaepernick did it 2 years ago,
right.
Starting in preseason in August, so we're just about there. So they're working on a resolution. The league and players union issued a joint statement late Thursday, hours after the Associated Press reported the Miami Dolphins players who protest on the field during the anthem would be could be suspended for up to 4 games under the team policy issued this week. Now, that is the league rule, that conduct detrimental to the team can get you a fine of a game salary or a up to a 4-game suspension. So Miami was simply, all the teams were going to come out, because with training camp starting, they have to have all their disciplinary rules in effect according to league rules before training camp begins. And so Miami was just the first one that apparently somebody in the press got a hold of. And so I don't know what the other teams were planning on doing, but in Miami, they were stating that, you know, the league policy that that would be conduct detrimental to the team, which could get you the 1-game, a fine or a 4-game suspension,
right,
up to a 4-game suspension. And I don't know if that's when all heck broke loose with the NFL Players Association. But it was a couple of hours later that they came out with that joint statement.
Mm.
Now, and you and I said, whatever the compromise is, isn't going to please everybody.
Right.
Even when the NFL came out with their statement saying, okay, if you want to come out on the field for the national anthem, you have to stand. You can't show any form of protest at that point. If you want to, if you can't do that, well, then stay in the locker room.
Right.
And when that came out, there were people that called the show that were displeased with that. They, no, everybody needs to be out. We've had a few people tonight write us and say, well, they should then just all stay in the locker room. Well, if they all stay in the locker room, there are going to be people that are ticked off, too.
Right.
You know, no matter what you do, it's not going to. But what long term could the NFL do? If you're part of the NFL owners group, what do you do? Do you demand that everybody comes out on the field and everybody must stand? Do you give them the choice so it's out of the public eye? Because that's what the NFL was trying to do. If everybody who comes out wishes to stand, it looks good. If 3 or 4 players, because that hasn't been the majority of teams that have done it. So 3 or 4 players want to stay in, nobody's going to notice. And therefore, it may be an issue this year a little bit, but next year and the year after and the year after that, people will forget about it and we'll move on with football. That's probably what the owners were thinking. But now that the NFL Players Association have said, nope, that wasn't good, they filed a grievance, and after Miami announced it, well, now they're attempting to come up with a resolution. Tell me another resolution to this.
I don't know what you do. Where
the players come out on the field and protest.
What are you going to do? Give them the protest minute? And now, before our national anthem, our protest minute.
We did talk about protest sections.
Yeah.
Fans and players can protest. Non-drinking section over here, because some of the stadiums have non-drinking sections.
Right.
No alcohol. Mm-hmm. No alcohol section. No protest. No protest and protest sections, too. Players, you can go up and protest with those fans over there if you
wish. Oh, and there's going to be a game.
This is the Maxine Waters burn the flag section over here.
Yes.
The only resolution that they can come to. Because we know that's what the owners over the last season went to the players and went to the Players Association. Guarantee it. We know that's what Kim Pegula of the Buffalo Bills, when she came out,
mm-hmm.
she came out and said, well, we talked to the players and told them the implications of things that they didn't know was happening. Well, what was happening? Television ratings are down. It's going to affect your next player's contract. You're going to make less money. What else would convince them to do it? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just don't know right now why, how you change things by going back to the table.
Right. What do you do?
The only thing you're doing right now, the NFL is doing right now, is bringing all of it back up again. And if you suspend the enforcement and this so-called negotiation with the Players Association goes on and on and on, once they start the season, I mean, even before we get to the official season, once it starts to play out and you have the protests, then you've spoiled, essentially, tainted another season.
Well, they've been talking now for, well, the grievance has been filed, was filed what, 2 weeks ago? Okay, so the grievance probably hasn't come to arbitration yet or whatever it would first go to. I don't know whether they go through to arbitration first. I'm not familiar with
about a week and a half, 2 weeks
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, with their particular process. But this shouldn't take long to figure out, right?
Well, I mean,
because either you're going to protest or you're not going to protest. Or is it simply that the possibility that the NFL Players Association, after 2 years, have said, we've got a contract to negotiate coming up here in the next year and a half, and our TV ratings are down 20%. So we need the NFL Players Association and all the players' reps on this. That, look, if you want to stay in the locker room, stay in the locker room. But if you're out on the field, that you've got to stand. Why? We got a contract coming up. And that if the NFL and the NFL Players Association both together agree on it, then there's pressure on the players to abide by it because it's about contract talks coming up very soon. Just throwing that out. I don't know whether
what agreement they, you know, because the association, keep in mind, the association certainly represents the players. And I think as they get closer to, you know, those negotiations, that's going to be in play. I don't know if it is this summer. That's my question. And I'm just asking.
Oh, no, it wouldn't be this. You know? It wouldn't be this summer. But the message is that the pressure starts coming when it's money. Because I guarantee that's what they've been telling. I guarantee the owners have been telling the representatives of the NFL Players Association and and the players themselves. This, if they ask the owners, and that's what Pegula said from Buffalo, we talked to the players. Do you know what this is going to affect? And a lot of them didn't know. What, they didn't put two and two together? If TV ratings are down 20%, that's going to affect your future earnings? Of course it is. And what would a player understand the most? Money! Hey, look, protest whatever you want. Protest whatever you want, whenever you want, when you're not being paid.
I don't see all of these players getting in line.
We saw the one player on Tennessee Titans said
they're
going to do it.
I just don't see any measure right now that the NFL is going to offer up any kind of incentive or disincentive on their side of it. Because by suspending the enforcement, here's what you're doing. You're basically saying, okay, we're open. This is going to be negotiations. This is going, and the negotiations, while it may be an official setting of the grievance process, this has not been official up until now. This has been players doing what they want to do on the field, and then the NFL reacting, and then the teams deciding they were going to show unity, and all of this mess that they created because they opened the door for it.
Yep. How do you close that door?
You don't.
Question.
You're not going to completely close this door. It may age out. But it's not going to age out. I don't believe it'll age out this season.
It'll age out over money when it ages out.
Well, age out because those players won't be worth money anyway, and the new players coming in are going to go, no, we worked really hard to get here.
Right. I can protest outside of the stadium.
Yeah.
Whatever I wish to protest.
I want to get signed. I want to play.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The index of prices we paid for food at the grocery store last month actually dropped a little bit, 0.1%.
This is the second month in a row that we've seen a decline at the grocery store. Last month, it decreased 0.4%.
Agriculture Department food price analyst Anne Marie Coons says price declines in June for things like pork, eggs, fats and oils, like peanut butter, fresh fruits and fresh vegetables more than made up for price hikes for most all other foods. Coons says even with two straight months now of overall grocery store food price declines,
that still leaves us 0.4% higher than it was in June of 2017. And looking at where prices have gone just so far this year, so far in 2018 compared to 2017, prices are also up 0.4%.
Coons has been forecasting that for all of 2018, food prices will rise between 0.5% up to maybe 1.5%. However, she's coming out with a new forecast this coming Wednesday. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. In the news today, hot in Texas. But then again, hotter in Phoenix and hotter in Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Other news out there, crude oil and natural gas production hit a new record in June. This just out yesterday. The highest production ever in the United States. And this is just, this week especially, very important because this week Eric and I celebrated 13 years of doing a show together. And
right.
It was 2005, 2006, 2007, the peak oil, I don't call them conspiracy theorists, but the peak oil people that said we're running out of oil, and they were just all over the place. Apparently mm-hmm. we weren't. Production of crude topped 10.7 million barrels a day, with production of natural gas hitting 4 million barrels a day, according to analysis released from the American Petroleum Institute yesterday. They praise the major energy milestone as a sign of the country's energy renaissance. U.S. oil production has supplied all of the growth in global oil demand so far this year. You hear that? All of the growth in global oil demand has been supplied by the United States so far and helped to compensate for production losses in some OPEC nations. The group said, with continued increases in drilling activity, the U.S. is poised for further production increases in natural gas and oil. The analysis also found that petroleum demand in the United States is the strongest since 2007. They did warn again, though, that the recent tariffs placed on steel and iron could harm oil and natural gas industry's success. It could slow it down.
Mm.
You and I mentioned earlier this week the story that was out there about the West Texas pipeline, that the Commerce Department, they went in and said, look, we want an exemption from the steel tariffs. We ordered this stuff. We can only get it from Greece. We ordered it last December.
Mm-hmm.
We want an exemption. This is extremely important. It is about U.S. national energy security. And so we want an exemption. They wouldn't give it to them.
Right.
And the company was just frustrated as all can be. Said, excuse me, the president said the tariffs are about national security. Energy and what we can produce in this pipeline is about our national energy security. How can you refuse us this? And they did.
Well, and that's going to affect, the tariffs will affect the equipment, not just the pipeline materials, but the equipment that's needed in the oil fields. That's going to be affected. That has to be passed along to the consumer.
Yep. So they're still going to do it,
mm-hmm.
But they said it's the cost may slow down things.
It's going to be more expensive. Well, who pays that? The consumer pays it.
Yep.
End of story. 866-90-RED-EYE for Omnitracs. Here's your forecast.
Blazing heat will consume much of the southern plains and lower Mississippi River Valley through early next week. Especially in Texas, expect record high temperatures surging well over 100 degrees through the start of the work week. Remember those hot summertime tips. Check on the elderly and sick. If you're on a job site, stay hydrated. Never leave kids or pets unattended in a car, and limit your strenuous outdoor activity. And there's not much in the way of showers. From Nebraska into Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, all dry today. That system in the upper Midwest will be moving into the Chicagoland area today, so showers for northern Illinois. Another system will put rain showers along the Gulf Coast from Jacksonville, Florida, up through South Carolina. For your Saturday, showers in the Midwest will become more widespread tomorrow, reaching into Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thank you, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye, said to announce the death of Adrian Cronauer.
Yeah.
On Thursday, the U.S. Air Force veteran and radio personality, whose experience as a disc jockey during the Vietnam War inspired the 1987 Robin Williams film Good Morning Vietnam. Passed away on Thursday. He was 79 years old. Quite a few of my Facebook friends in Washington had actually worked with him on certain things and said he was just a, you know, just a great gentleman. A lot of people have always asked, well, did he sound at all like Robin Williams? Well, he has admitted he wasn't as animated as Robin Williams was in the actual movie, but I have a little audio clip of Adrian Cronauer.
All right.
In his role as a disc jockey for the U.S. Air Force, where he did coin the phrase "Good morning, Vietnam." Here we go.
Good morning, Vietnam. It's just a smidgen past 6:05, and here we go with another day's version of the Don Buster Show from Armed Forces Radio. I'm Airman Adrian Cronauer, and for the next 4 hours, we've got the best in popular music for you here, so let's get started right now with music.
So there you go.
There you have it.
I just love, look, we're in radio, so any type of radio.
Well, the movie was funny. He wasn't, you know, as you said, he wasn't as quiet,
animated,
as crazy as Robin Williams was in the movie.
The movie's great.
The movie is really great. I thought it was really great.
I know, funny. I wish I could have met Bruno Kirby just to tell him you don't know. You know, how great that was.
Well, because a lot of us in radio can relate to someone who was a lot like Bruno Kirby's character in the movie. We've seen it before. A little bit of jealousy going on. That was just a great movie. It was just a fun movie.
It was. Lieutenant, you know? Steve.
Lieutenant Steve. Lieutenant Steve. Trying to do his own characters. That was funny. That was funny.
And remember, I mean, it was ad lib, a lot of that from Robin Williams. They just let him go. I mean,
right.
A lot of that wasn't scripted.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said, well, he would have been a great DJ. And it's like, well, could he have done it every single day? That's the whole point.
Right.
You know, he's an actor, and he was an actor and could do it. And it's like, could he have done it all the time? If he could have done that all the time, Robin Williams could have been a great DJ in the 1960s, early 1970s.
Yeah, he was doing classic Robin Williams is what he was doing.
He was doing, right.
You know, I mean, basically that's what that was. He was doing his own stuff that he did in stand-up and television, and that was him. You know, that basically being Robin Williams, but the fact that it was based on, you know, Adrian Cronauer, was I thought was cool.
Right, and the one thing that was not true was that Adrian Cronauer working for Armed Forces Radio was that kind of a radical.
Right.
That he was going to give any type of
troop positions
or U.S. casualties or anything else. Mm-hmm.
No,
you would have been yanked off the air extremely quick. So they took.
You don't own the radio station.
Yes, they took extreme liberties on that portion there. But
I actually had a friend. We were friends as teenagers in Del Rio, Texas, and he went in to the military, and I did not know this until, unfortunately, after he passed, he went into Armed Forces Radio. So he was, that was kind of part of his job in the military, and became his job, later in the military, which was fascinating because we really didn't follow each other. We linked up on Facebook, before he passed, but I did not know the story that we'd both gone into radio.
Wow.
Yeah. And he went into Armed Forces Radio.
Yeah. I knew a couple of people early in my radio career that were in Armed Forces Radio. And because of that, got the bug.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of them said, no, I really didn't have a lot of experience, but somehow I ended up and somebody asked me, well, would you like to do it? And I said, yes. Will it get me out of the infantry?
Yeah. I think it was, seemed to be a technical calling for my friend because he was more on the technical and engineering side. He did some announcing, but he was doing a lot of the admin and technical and engineering stuff. I had no idea, but I just found it fascinating that we both parted ways. I was about the age of 15. And then a few years later, I got in radio, and apparently he went into the military, and then he got into radio.
And then splicing together the Nixon tapes.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Job number one.
I don't believe that ever really happened.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think that ever happened, but it was still extremely funny. So rest in peace.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, like I said, a few of my Facebook friends who work and live in Washington dealt with him on a number of things because he was active in, searching for MIAs throughout his life after the military. So. Mm-hmm. In other news, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is hitting the national campaign trail this week with Bernie Sanders. It's the socialist train. The young and the old.
Everybody get on board.
It's the get on the Democrat socialist train.
Yeah.
They're stumping for other left-wing candidates. I love this, how this is written. This is from Fox News. Even as the upstart 28-year-old Democratic Socialist's rising profile continues to rankle top Democrats. Hey.
Yeah.
We talked about it earlier in the show, but Democrats are going to have to decide who they are. I actually think the split is bigger in the Democrat Party right now. You want to know what the split is? Here's a split just in one day. You had House members.
Mm-hmm.
Democrat House members chanting USA, USA as they were talking about election security. They're chanting USA, USA, which we didn't know was allowed anymore in the Democratic Party.
No,
we didn't know you were allowed to chant USA, USA.
I don't know when they became such nationalists.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, Eric and I found it quite offensive.
Well, because they're excluding...
They're excluding, right.
People who aren't in the USA. You can't do that.
But you were getting
wrong.
You were getting that from Democratic congressmen. Mm-hmm. And in the same 24-hour span, Maxine Waters supporters out burning an American flag in front of her office.
Yeah.
So really, in a way, when I saw that, I said, it's actually, it does give you an idea of, in all seriousness now, it does give you an idea where the Democrats stand right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for Joe Lieberman to come out of nowhere, mean, he just came out of nowhere.
he really did.
Of a sudden, you know, he's everywhere saying our party can't go this way. And you and I were looking at each other. Why today have you not noticed this is a direction your party has been going in for quite a long time?
What is it that woke you up?
Yeah, what was it that finally said, "I got Joe Lieberman's got to come back and say, Cortez, no way."
Right. I mean, Bernie ran in 2016.
Right.
Where were you then, Joe?
But that's the question that we've asked it before, but I think we asked it with a little bit more inquisitiveness and wonderment. Is this the year with somebody like Cortez and the fact that, you know, they took the vote. Now, it wasn't a binding vote, but they took the vote in the House. Mm-hmm. And 133 Democrats voted present. They would not vote to support ICE.
How would she vote?
Yeah. And
we know.
So if you're to that point now where you vote present, we're not going to play this game. We're not going to play this game of Republicans wanting us to be public about our beliefs. Huh? Really?
How dare you?
I don't care. You
ask us to take an official position.
If I was in Congress, a Democrat could play those games with me anytime they ever wanted to. Well, they're using this vote just to find out where I stand. Yeah, but where I stand's right, so I don't care. I'll vote on it.
Fine. Right. This is what I believe. This is what I'm actually promoting.
What I believe is what I believe. Mm-hmm. Why would 133 Democrats be such cowards as to not promote what they actually believe about ICE?
Because they didn't vote yes. They also didn't vote no.
Right. They didn't vote yes. They didn't vote no.
You can't get away with that.
That's my that was our point before, is the fact that they wouldn't vote yes, but they wouldn't vote no. You're not making any friends because the left is going, Cortez is going out saying, look at all these 133 Democrats that didn't vote. We need to get rid of them.
Yeah. Nope.
And that shows you the split that they have right now. That's the split that they have in their party. Think about it. We can't even promote what we believe now.
Now, the ones that were chanting USA, maybe they were just supporting the cable network.
Is anything on that network anymore? Okay, I just don't. When you just said USA, I'm like, I can't think of anything I've watched recently on USA.
Oh, I haven't watched it.
Oh.
But it's on.
All right. We have to bring this up very quickly because we talked about it, I think, just for a couple of minutes earlier this week. But there it is. New York Post. Elon Musk's bizarre tweets are raising red flags on Wall Street. Wall Street analysts, regulators, and the media have all been recent victims of the eccentric billionaire, but his calling a member of a team rescuing the Thai soccer team basically a pedophile.
He used pedo, but
more than raise eyebrows. A July 15 tweet prompted an open letter from the rescue team, who described Musk's behavior as fueling an unhelpful perception of your leadership, thin skin and short-tempered.
You know, he tried to apologize. He did apologize. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to temper the concern of investors in his company.
And they go back on all the other different things. There's a bunch of items here where they're saying, now investors and people on Wall Street looking. And you and I said this first segment, what in the world's going on in his mind? He's constantly looking for not only investors, but more government support to keep his business interests alive. Mm-hmm. Remember, Tesla's going to be profitable by, was it 2019 or 2020?
Yeah, 2020.
2020 to be profitable. Well, not without the subsidies.
Oh, you have to have that. That's a given.
Then you're not going to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And so one wonders what in the world is going on in his head.
Well, I mean,
it's just bizarre.
And what in the world would drive that? You know, I just don't get it.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
Unless he's feeling the pressure.
Mm.
Then again, he's had to feel pressure his whole life with this. He's constantly trying to raise money for years. So, I mean, why would you feel pressure now?
I don't know what pressure.
Right.
I really don't.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Is your engine prepared for hot summer months? As the temperature rises, so does the importance of preventative maintenance and inspections. Avoid losing your cool and stay on the road longer with a simple pressure test of your engine's cooling system radiator cap. Radiator caps are one of the most commonly overlooked parts of a vehicle's cooling system. They maintain enough cooling system pressure to allow the coolant to absorb more heat from your engine. Poorly maintained radiator caps can result in an overheated engine, especially during intense summer temperatures. Stay cool and keep rolling with an easy pre-trip inspection of your cooling system.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. My favorite story of the day, though, was the story from the Free Beacon. Oregon voters to decide sanctuary state status in November. The Oregon Secretary of State's office on Tuesday qualified an initiative for the 2018 election that would repeal a 1987 law that limits the use of state and local law enforcement resources to enforce federal immigration laws. Why? Because they're trying to curb immigration to levels that are environmentally sustainable.
All right. There you go.
The clash. Wow. The clash of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're all for open borders and everything. Yeah, but it's not environmentally sustainable for our region. Oh.
We need to promote that more.
Oh.
How has that not hit California yet?
Oh.
See, because you can't have a family. Right? Because that's wrong.
Right.
You're killing the planet.
Right.
Because that's going to require you to have large vehicles and live in a large house. Oh, wait a minute. Now we're going to increase the number of people in our state. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to rethink this.
Is it environmentally sustainable?
Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.